Welcome to the Two Girls with Grief Book Club. We might laugh or we might cry, but we always read.
Book club where we might make ourselves cry, but sometimes read books that are fun, that involve grief, like The Beach Read that we're reading right now. And we're going through chapters 11 through 15 in this episode. So hopefully you've been following along because it's starting to get steamy up in these chapters.
I'm loving the spice as we gradually get further into the book.
I love the buildup, and just it starts with like they're starting their segue, like not dates, which I feel like end up, of course, being like date, you know, like it leads into that. But one thing that she did mention that had to do with her grief a little bit, but also just like about reading, which I feel like we really relate to, is that she said what made her fall in love with reading is feeling like that it's a new world that was being spun like a spider web around you and you couldn't move until the whole thing revealed itself. And I feel like we both love reading. We both read a ton of books. And I feel like especially in the grieving, sometimes you do need to experience like another world when your world feels really sad.
Yeah.
And I think I read a lot of happy books. Kendall went the opposite direction. Like whatever you choose to read, you know, you might need to like read someone's sadder reality to make yourself feel better. You know, there's no right or wrong way for that. So, but yeah, I thought that was a really relatable line that like, that's such a great thing that you can do when you just can't get your world to look different than what it looks like at the time.
Yeah, I think there's something beautiful in like, whatever you read, that when you read a book, you're transforming. You don't leave a book the same way you enter a book. And I think even if you're grieving and you feel like so stuck in life and you feel like just everything sucks, you still are changing when you read a book. Like you don't stay the same. And I think like that's such the beauty. And I think like a huge part of healing too, like if you're grieving and you love books, I hadn't picked up in a book so long until I was grieving. And then to find that it was like a catalyst to help me open my mind, see a bigger perspective on things. And I think like that's why you and I are very like passionate about this, like both reading, yeah, but also like talking about grief as well.
Yeah. And the books have opened kind of different outlet for it that makes you like think of different memories. I mean, Crying in H Mart, our first book, was hit a lot of emotions and a lot of memories that I was not expecting. This one's definitely more lighter, that has grief elements, but also has like the fun, datey kind of elements as well. But another key thing I feel like in her grief process that she did mention in the book was mourning the years that her mom spent in the hospital.
Yeah.
And like how, you know, so many years, like hospital visits, her mom lost her hair, lying sick on the couch. And I know we both dealt with sick family members. And so I was thinking of that too, especially like with my sister, my mom, like my dad, like just how much time got taken from them, not even when from them passing away, but them having to deal with sickness and hospital visits and just the scariness of that. Like no one likes going to the hospital, no one likes running tests and doing all this stuff. So yeah, I definitely think that was a really relatable part of the book. Did you catch that when you're audio reading, listening?
Yeah, it definitely hits a tender point. And I do appreciate it when people would bring up the parts of grief that are not spoken about as much. And you and I call it pre-grief, but, and, you know, shout out to the social media grief community, both on like Instagram and TikTok. Like I'm learning so much about my own grief. I'm learning like the vocabulary, how to talk about this. And I can't remember the word, but they're like, you and I call it.
I've seen people say like anticipatory grief is one of them. There's a few terms. I mean, I think that the fact of the matter is no one knows everything about grief.
Right,
to come to terms with it. We called it pre-grief. You might call it anticipatory grief. I think there's another term floating around. Like, no one is a pro. Like, you can study grief and you will be a pro because everyone's different. It's just a weird, weird thing to experience. So,
yeah. And I think with you and our experiences with that pre-grief and that, it's that hospital period, like that comes along with its own trauma as well. And
yeah,
so it does, like same thing with the previous book, like it touches on hospital visits being like really heard. And like, I know you and I have talked in another episode where like the beeping I heard from the heart monitor, like that's something I can't get out of my brain sometimes. Like,
when I hear the noises of like going flat. The worst noise. Like just knowing that they're gone. Like, there's so much trauma just like hospitals and the experience waiting to hear news of like what's happening or getting calls. It's just there's a lot with that that you have to deal with that people don't talk about. It's worse than them just passing away. It's everything that led up to it.
Right.
If you deal with like any sickness or anything. Obviously there's different types of passing away. But to move on to some happier elements in the book, I love that for their not date, she took him to a carnival. She said it was the perfect place to fall in love.
It was.
I don't think I've ever gone to a carnival with a guy. I feel like growing up, I don't think that people do it as much now or care about it. It feels like waste to like PG, but like sitting next to a boy on like a, is it a Ferris wheel or not Ferris wheel? Like the thing that like circles up. Yeah. You know, sitting next to a boy on a Ferris wheel. And I feel like that is what I think about when it's just like cute PG fun, you know, dating. So I thought it was cute. And she's like, it's a perfect inspiration for you to write a love romance story. So I thought that was really cute.
I'm so eager to hear how they interpret each other's genre in writing their books because, like, exactly. This carnival was great fodder for a romance. But through his lens, I'm interested to see how, like, what it actually comes out
as. What it takes it into. Yeah, I mean, he's such, like, the negative Nancy guy. But there was something cute in there because they were, like, bickering. And he mentioned, like, he brought up, like, every guy that she dated in college.
Yeah.
And it's, like, it's one of those things where, like, a guy notices you more than you think he does sometimes. And, like, she had a crush on him, but she didn't think he did. But, like, the things that he's revealing, like, you wouldn't notice all that and remember it years later unless you're interested in her. So I think it's, like, kind of starting to open your eyes a little bit. Like, oh, you liked me. Like, you liked me or, like, there was interest there. Like, I'm surprised you remembered.
Yeah, it's interesting how, like, when we started, he didn't even he acted like he didn't even know her. And then now we're, like, he's listing off all her previous boyfriends.
And I feel like that's all that girls want. Not, like, it's, like, they say, like, to be loved is to be seen. And I feel like Gus is, like, slowly revealing those things. Those, like, secret information that, like, it means a lot. That, like, you notice those things, you remember them, like, years later. I think that's super cute to me. I always get giddy over those things. One thing that she mentioned, I think they started talking about when he mentioned her ex-boyfriends and he referred to as like the golden boy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that we talk about like on the podcast a bunch is like either friendships or relationships having like breakups because of grief. And she mentioned that her and her boyfriend broke up because he didn't know how to support her because they're always this like happy couple that did all these things. They hosted, you know, the perfect little couple. He didn't like that she was sad and that she was like crying and didn't want to get out of bed, and he didn't know how, or maybe just didn't care to support that version of her. He like only wanted the cookie cutter perfect partner.
Yeah.
And the line that really got me where she said he was like, you're not yourself anymore, and she was like, no, you're wrong. I am myself, but I stopped trying to glow in the dark for him or for anyone else. So basically like trying to be this perfect version of herself to fit him and to fit them as a couple, and she wasn't able to do that because she was grieving and you know, going through all this stuff, especially like not just grieving her dad, his death, but like that relationship of like finding out he had a mistress and you know, and then it affecting her relationship with her mom that she also was really close to. So all those things, she wasn't able to like then be the cheerleader for him and the happy person. And I thought that was super relatable just because everyone experiences that. And you hear so often that like, couples break up because of it, because they don't know how to be there for you when you're sad and you're not this happy person.
And then all of a sudden you're grieving like a whole new thing. You're grieving a relationship. And then like, how do you survive the loss of somebody and then the lack of a relationship that you depended on?
Yeah. And I think a clear kind of thing she mentions, maybe this chapter or the next, was like, you want your partner to be the first person that you want to call when something bad happened, like your dad passing away. And she said that he wasn't the first person that she wanted to call. So I feel like that was kind of a big indicator that he wasn't the right one. And I think it's also that kind of thought process that you don't really think about sometimes until something bad happens. And then your mind just automatically goes to the first person you think of. And it, you know, that I think that's why we talk about like grief so often makes you rethink your friendships and just who matters to you and all those different things. So I like that that was like pointed out in the book. Did you notice that when you're listening to that chapter?
Yeah. And I kind of along the same lines when she mentioned that she wasn't feeling about like when he was asleep, like that he was like the most perfect person for her. And she was like, I would look at him and I didn't feel anything for him. And it wasn't like she was living up for the image of the perfect relationship, but it wasn't fulfilling to her, especially when she needed him, like the previous boyfriend the most. And I think back to the point of him like mentioning that you're not yourself anymore. Well, like, duh, when you're grieving, the person who's grieving is also not feeling like themselves anymore. Like, they don't even know who they are. And they're confused about how to deal with the situation. And if it's your first loss, and like, you can speak to many losses after that, but like, you're changing, you're catalyzing. And yeah, you don't know how to communicate that to somebody unless they experience it of like, yeah, I don't know who I am anymore. I just know the sadness is real. The sadness is coming from within me. And if that can't be accepted or, you know, supported, then what, like, how else can this person be a part of your life if they can't accept this, like, fundamental part of you?
Yeah, and I think it's kind of a reflection of even just, like, dating culture now. It's like, you may envision the partner of, like, who you think you need to be with. Please, you know, and you get petty. Like, I keep seeing videos of like, oh, he gave me the ick, and just like some silly thing. And it's like, everyone will give you the ick for something, you know, like, but you can't like, I need him to be tall, this hair color, this color eyes. I need to have this jaw, you know, like, I feel like when you do that, you're like, you're not thinking about the most smart things. It's like, are you going to be alone in your partnership? Are they going to be there for you when shit gets hard? And I think that's the most important thing that people need to think about. And I'm glad that that was kind of mentioned in the book, of just her reevaluating that and like realizing she was with him for like 7 years and just like not actually happy in that relationship.
Yeah.
Which is a crazy time.
Snaps to evaluation, snaps to doing what you need to do for your life.
It's never too late to figure out what you want.
Yeah.
And when you
agreed.
Yeah. But the next chapter, and Kendall's reading it through or listening to through audio, and I'm reading it through chapters. So I feel like I'm directing the chapter just to kind of encapsulate like what's actually happening in this chapter. So Kendall's just kind of reading, like listening in as like a continuous story.
And a review for the book. It's so good. It's such easy, like easy listening, easy reading. Cause I read half the book in one day and I was like, oh shit, I gotta stop, or I'm gonna read the whole freaking book in one day, and I'm not gonna know what happens when we talk about this in 4 weeks. So I am a little far ahead, but it's just because it's that good. I've really enjoyed it, and Emily Henry is just like a phenomenal writer.
Yeah, so I'm trying to organize these notes to rein Kendall into a chapter so she remembers what happened in each one. But the chapter 12 opens up where, I think it's chapter 12 or my ending in chapter 11, where basically she met her parents met at a carnival. And I think that's probably why she chose that as her first date. And maybe even like consciously, like as much as she's doubting her parents' love, that's something that she idolized, something that she looked up to. And then she's like, hey, I think he said that's cute. You know, it's like a typical love story type thing. And she's like, no, my dad cheated on my mom with cancer. So, like, it wasn't actually a cute story. And I think that's really hard to deal with when grieving. It's like being mad at someone that's no longer here.
Yeah, especially when, like, I know I do this with, like, my own dad, and I have to check myself and be like, no, your dad was a real person. Like, I definitely put him up on a pedestal now that he's passed, and I just, like, I will overlook some of these, like, flaws of his, because it just feels weird to acknowledge the flaws after someone's passed. But I do, I have to check myself and be like, no, your dad was not perfect. He did have, like, his own quirks and his own flaws. And nothing, like, detrimental, but, like, it's very easy to want to, I think, I don't know the word, but, like, put the person up on a pedestal and think, like, they were so great and flawless when, like,
that's all you hear about at funerals. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, they're still a person, and they still had their own things. And regardless, that's still okay to, like, recognize them as a person. You can still, I think, romanticize the idea of the person, if that helps. Like, I'm not gonna be like, don't do that, but for me, I had to, like, kind of check myself at some point and be like, okay, I talk about, like, my dad as if he's perfect, but he did have little flaws that, you know, at the time bothered me when he was alive. So, like, that's just, like, reality.
And that's just life. No one's perfect. It's not like your parents won't ever annoy you. That's
and
just
this
reality.
Is clearly what she's going through with her own dad, is, like, she has all these great memories with her dad, and then this huge glaring thing that she's now having to reckon with, and I imagine that is really difficult.
Yeah. And this chapter, I think we mentioned it last chapter, but this is the actual chapter where Gus mentions the dedication on her book, and because I think of the carnival stuff, and the dedication is to my parents, who are proof of fate's strong animatronic hand. And that's because her parents met at the carnival at an animatronic hand that, like, was getting prediction, and the dad waited. She was, like, swearing it was storm because her ticket got stuck, and then he went after her, and then their ticket said, her said, you will meet a handsome stranger, and his said, your story's about to begin. And so that's where the dedication came from. Super cute. People don't be like that anymore.
No. Where's the carnival? This is actually carnival season right now, like fall.
I know. I've been to a few, but never with a guy, actually. Carnival jeans never came.
Give Rachel a call. Call her up. Take her to a carnival. Let's get that off the bucket list.
Let's just check that off real quick. But one thing that I do like about Gus, beyond, I mean, I feel like a lot of things, but I feel like she's kind of spiraling about, it's not that cute, he cheated, blah, blah, blah. And he said that he really liked the dedication, like, it really stuck with him. And she just, like, well, it's fake. It didn't, you know, it didn't mean anything. And he said it wasn't a lie, but maybe a complicated truth, but not a lie. And I feel like that is just kind of a good way to, I don't know, just life. I feel like you get so stuck on, like, what life is going to look like or how people are going to be. And the truth is that, like, it can take you 5,000 different directions, throw different things at you, and people are flawed, you know, and you have to kind of find that balance of, sometimes you expect someone to be perfect and just no one is. And I liked Gus's take on that. It wasn't perfect, but it's not a, like, their love wasn't a lie. It still meant something. And even, you learn about, like, the actual reason for the affair later on, but it's not clear cut. Not that I'm fan of cheating or anything, but.
Well, and I think, like, as you get older, your idea and definition of love changes. And, you know, like, where is it? There's, like, 7 different Latin words for love, and they all have a different attribute to different relationships. And so I think, like, while she's reckoning with this hard reality with her dad, Gus can acknowledge, like, the love was still there regardless. It just looks different than what you expected it to be.
Yeah. And this is also the chapter where you learn about his backstory a little bit. His dad was, like, a POS. I think he might have been abusive or something. And he basically, he's talking about how he wanted, and his mom passed away when he was young, but before she passed away, he was always hoping for her to leave the dad and for them to run away. And he had that, like, fantasy that life was going to work out because his mom was going to save him. I don't know if it actually mentioned how she passed away, but he said that reality was learning, like, oh, his mom could have left, but was never going to, and kind of being led down by that fact of, like, you could have saved us. I had a bag packed. We could have lived a good life, but you stayed. And I think that's way more complicated. Obviously, you hear about, you know, all those different stories. But as a kid, it's like you don't really understand the reasons why someone would stay in an abusive relationship. It's way more layered than that, and psychological and all these things, financial manipulation. Like, there's so many different reasons. And he mentioned the reason why he's so obsessed with this cult book is because he wanted to understand why the reasons people stay no matter the cost.
Yeah.
And I think that's him trying to deal with his trauma, childhood trauma. You know, if my mom did it to our detriment, why do other people do it? Cults is obviously an extreme way to do it, but I feel like you get a better understanding of Gus as a character.
Yeah.
And that.
Yeah, and I think when we talk about grief, and I think when just listening to other people talk about grief, whether it is complicated or not, grief and love go hand in hand, weirdly enough. And to have a relationship like he does with his mom, like clearly you love your parents, and then he's wanting her to leave out of, you know, his probably his own safety. But then you're looking at the person who's supposed to save you, and they're trapped in that relationship. Now, whether that is, I'm not a psychologist, so I'm not going to claim anything. But, you know, whether it's out of love or manipulation, sometimes you can't tell the difference when you're in it. And it's very easy to be on the outside and be like, well, if it was me, I would have left a long time ago. I hate that
phrase because it's never true. It's like never.
Yeah, and I was like, if it was that easy, they would have. Like, if it was that easy for them to leave, then it would. And, you know, I read a stat somewhere, like, the times when, and I'll say just for women in domestic abuse cases, you know, become very physically abused or worse to the point where she might lose her life is when she's trying to leave. That is how caustic that situation is. Particularly in this case for women to leave a difficult relationship. Like, it might actually cost her life. And like, that's a very difficult thing to expect of people in tough relationships, and just be like, well, if you truly cared about your kid or you truly cared about yourself, you would have left. And it's like, it's not that cut and dry. It's not that black or white.
It's not that easy. Another thing that she mentions about her parents in this chapter, and kind of her being like this quirky, like weird girl, was that she was only child, but she said her parents watched her like she was a TV, like the most interesting thing that to exist. And that kind of inflated her ego and like what she was capable of. And I feel like my parents were like that too, in a sense that, like, you know, they always cheered me on and always, you know, I was the best. I was going to accomplish this and that. And I just looked, read that line of nostalgia of like, I miss that, like, of just people that believe in you wholeheartedly for everything that you do. And the line that like got me was, she said she thought home would always be a safe place where the three of us belonged. And we both talked about how when you lose people, like especially family members or level, you know, whoever feels like home to you, home feels like a weird thing now, because that safe place where you could rely on people and have people to catch you is gone. And so I read that line and I was like, oh yeah, that's weird. I hate that.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It's like, wow, the belief somebody had in you, and now you're like, who believes in me that much? Will anybody ever believe in me as much as, like, in this case, you know, her parents?
Yeah, such a sweet thought. And I like throughout this chapter, especially the carnival, they're bickering, and you see that
the answer is so good.
Yeah, and I like how they're kind of throwing back like story plot lines, and January's actually putting in happy endings or like happy ending elements, which she was not able to do before. So I feel like her relationship with Gus and them opening up to each other has freed up mental space for her to like start to process things and think of things differently. And kind of unleash her creative mind again. And you see that kind of happening in this chapter. And then it ends with a super cute, like, they they go to see Dave at like some, I forgot what it is. It's like some restaurant, some chain restaurant, and they go to see this guy that's supposed to be in the cult, but he doesn't show up. And they're sharing, I don't even remember what their banter was about or their conversation. And then all of a sudden, like, their knees touch. And then Gus's hand kind of like grazes her knee. And then she kind of touches his hand. And then all of a sudden, they're just like holding hands under the table and like not talking about it. And it's just like this cute, like, she's like, it's like we're 16 and just like holding hands and being awkward about it. And I was like, oh, that's so cute. Makes you giddy. Makes me feel like I'm a teenage girl.
No, really. And I will, that this whole book really just sums it up. Like, I was like, oh, this is what it feels like to like fall in love for the first time again.
Yeah. Have that like crush. And chapter 13 is like super dramatic. And I had to point this out to Kendall because she's listening to it. Chapter 13 is literally just the line, I dreamed of Gus Everett and I need a shower. So I feel like that's kind of the start of like, okay, they're becoming this thing because she's pointing that out, like, where
the level has been raised.
Yeah, their friendship is crossing the lines. It's the first time anything's happened. So, super cute. Chapter 14 enters with, like, her kind of figuring out about, like, the boundaries of, like, breaking down from friends to lovers. And which is like one of my favorite tropes.
From enemies to friends to lovers. We're just checking.
Yeah. When they weren't really like, they're like fake enemies, like fake like enemies to her, like her just jealousy, but like wanting him and feeling like he didn't like her, even though they had that night. And actually in the previous chapter, he did mention that he broke up with his girlfriend too because of their one night of like being handsy and dancing. So he was into it. He liked her. There was a thing, and she was like shocked. She's like, what does that mean? What do you mean that you broke up with her?
Should yeah, because like... it messes her whole timeline and trajectory.
Yeah.
She had such a specific view of that night and the events that happened and led up to them having a little makeout sesh. And then for him to provide this one extra piece of context, she's like, whoa, this whole thing has now changed.
Yeah. And a big thing not related to Gus that she mentions in chapter 14 that January mentions is she feels like people stopped checking on her. She just mentions like the calls haven't been coming in. And I feel like that's something that grievers can really relate to, that at some point people stop asking because they either because like, it's like they have their own lives and, you know, people move on. It's not the center of their world type of thing.
Right.
But also because people think that you're okay. Like, you just moved on. Like, oh, okay. I was there for a bit and they're done with it. So we just wrap that up. And
yeah. It's very hard because I remember this too. You get the flood of texts, the flood of calls. And I remember feeling like overwhelmed. Like, I just could not respond to all of them because I couldn't even. At some point, I think I was just copying and pasting messages just to people because I was just I don't know what to say. And then, you know, people will check it, but then I think I don't know, 4 or 6 months you might get a random out of the blue one, but by that point that flood has stopped.
Yeah.
And when people do reach out and they ask you, well, how are you doing, and like, what are you supposed to say? Like, I'm still doing shitty, like life still sucks, like
I'm really sad,
I'd be kind of burned, like
people don't get it. I was gonna say people don't get it, and what are you supposed to say other than you're okay?
Yeah. I wish back then I felt empowered enough or confident enough. And I think I was only honest about how I was truly feeling, like with my own immediate family when they asked.
Yeah.
I think for other people,
it's a lot.
It is a lot. And it's a lot to put on somebody if they're just doing like the flyby check-in and they're just like, how are you doing? And you're well, let me tell you, actually, the last 4 days, I haven't taken a shower. So,
you're like, I haven't eaten.
Want to go.
I didn't brush my teeth. Like, you know, I
don't know what day it is.
Yeah. So I think people get really weirded out about just how it affects you in so many ways, and they don't want to have those conversations. So I totally related when she's like, her world felt empty, and she was in this beautiful beach, in this beautiful place, but she never really felt so alone. And like, Gus element was like making her feel less alone and whatever was happening with that, but she wasn't sure. And so she just went to the beach and started crying, and she was sitting there, and like, and then a bird, I don't know if the bird pooping on her made her cry or she was already crying and the bird pooped. I can't remember what the time, which one was first. Do you remember?
Yeah, I don't remember either, but it was honestly funny, like great comedic timing.
Yeah, and then I remember she turned around and Gus is just standing there, like watching her cry, and she's just like, a bird pooped on me. She just walked up to him and then he pulled her in for a hug. And then he's like, that's a lot of poop. And it's like, and it was like kind of comedic timing. And I feel like that's kind of what crying as a griever is. It's like you may be bawling 1 second and then like the next second something makes you laugh. And I think you really need that. Like your soul needs both sometimes. Like as sad as you get, you need that laughter. You need to allow that to still be there. So I thought that was good timing. And then they're just kind of hugging for a little bit, and then their date night happened, or their not date night, where they did a drive-in movie theater, which another is like also super another cute super cute thing. Like, hello, that is so cute.
Totally. There's one here, and it's like a double feature drive-in. It's very old school retro. So there's one near you. Go support your local drive-in.
Yeah, so they don't close.
Yeah.
And this one, of course, like, this is where things start to heat up. They're, like, watching the movie, but then they just kind of, like, lying facing each other, like, knees touching, or, like, always having a body part touching. And then January starts freaking out, and she's like, I have to go to the bathroom. And he's like, you just went pee. And she's like, I have a small bladder. And then they just kind of, like, neither one of them want to make the first move, but they're, like, really close. And then Gus finally kisses her. And then she's, like, straddling him. They're, like, making out, and then they get kicked out, basically.
Like a family establishment. Style.
Yeah. And then they leave. And then this part, chapter 15, makes me sad because I can't imagine like you're making out this guy that you have had this crush on and things are finally starting to happen. And then he just left.
Yeah, disappears.
Like he disappeared. He didn't say anything to her for days. And she's just spiraling and like.
No explanation. No, yeah. No, nothing.
And she just starts writing her story, like starting to get like a little darker as like kind of the spiraling, like it was like happier and then now it's going darker. And then she had mentioned in previous chapters like she was starting to write Gus as like this like love interest guy in her story. And then she started changing his plot lines to like not a happy ending after he just like disappeared after they made out and without like trace, without anything. And I would be so pissed off if that was me.
Like, oh, 100%.
Yeah, and it's sad because it's like, I feel like sometimes when you have those happy moments, then it just gets taken away by, like, this, like, why did he just leave?
Communication.
Yeah, and it just spirals her writing and changing, and it starts, the chapter then goes to, like, her, she's doing, like, a book signing at the bookstore there, and then we find out that Pete is actually his aunt,
my favorite
mom's sister.
I literally gasped. I was like, plot twist.
And a perfect auntie fashion, she's like spilling all the tea and she's just like, he really likes you, be patient with him. And she lets him know that the day that they met, it was his birthday, but like that's the day that his wife walked out on him or like asked for a divorce. And so she's, like, spiraling as she's, like, talking because her aunt thinks that, like, obviously, if Gus is interested in this girl, she knows that he's divorced and all these things. And she's just spiraling in her head, like, what? He's married? Divorced? He was married? And, like, he loved someone, and this, like, this guy that's so cynical got married, and then he got divorced, and she left him. And she's like, what the hell? Because in her mind, he was always that cynical guy. Mm-hmm. But he's, like, kind of worse. And that part confused her, but she just, like, can't fathom, like, how he became that guy that got married and then divorced.
Right, yeah.
I feel like
that the day that they met was the day, like, was it finalized or was, like, served or something? Like,
no, I think it's just, like, the anniversary of it. I don't think it was, I don't remember. I think it was just, and I think it wasn't that, because I think they said that his friend just always throws him a big birthday because of that happened. And so she's freaking out, but she's like, Gus loves someone enough to marry them.
And never have brought her up, never like mentioned anything about Fable's marriage.
But she was kind of going slow and kind of respecting his pace. But then she's like, he loves someone enough to marry. Like, he's so skeptical, but he married someone, but he made out with me and he just left. And so she's like spiraling because she's like, I don't get it. Like, why would he? We just kissed and I thought this was a great thing and he's gone. And that's the end of chapter 15. And you're going to have to wait till next Monday to find out why Gus left. Don't be like Kendall and Weed Ahead. Stick with us for the show.
It's juicy. You will want to stay tuned. You will want to know more.
I did skip ahead, not to be hypocritical, but I did read ahead because I have to figure out what happened.
Yeah, for sure. That's why I said I couldn't stop because I had to be like, oh, gosh, every end is so good. I have to know what happens next.
Yeah. So, as always, we have these episodes every Monday. Next Monday, we will do chapters 16 through 20. They're going to be juicy and chaotic from what I read already. And I'm excited to talk about those. You could follow us on Two Girls with Grave Pod on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. And we will have our actual podcast episode tomorrow if you're listening to this on Monday. And every Tuesday we release those episodes. And you can email us at Two Girls with Grave Pod with any comments, questions. We've been loving all the comments. Me and Kendall like send them back to each other. So we appreciate all the comments, people following along. And please rate and subscribe on our podcast so more people get to see our podcast. Because that's the only way it really starts to grow.
Yeah,
anything else we left out? Yeah.
I don't think so, but this was a good section of the book, and I'm super excited for the next one.
Yeah, this is a super cute chapter. It made me feel like a teenage girl. So, where everything was simple.
Feeling giddy again.
And everyone was still alive. Darked out. Okay, well, everyone, thank you for listening in, and stay tuned tomorrow for our official episode.
Bye.
Bye.